From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, does Santa exist? Now think about it. I know it's early. It's not even Halloween yet. But there's a big question there. Here's what's happening. U.S. health officials are now seeking 132 passengers who flew on a plane with a Texas nurse, another nurse, on the day before she came down with the symptoms of Ebola. The second person infected in the U.S., Amber Vinson, 29 years old, fell ill on Tuesday. Both she and that first nurse had treated Liberian Thomas Eric Duncan, who died a week ago in Dallas. And people, of course, are beginning to panic all over the place. Christian Wilde, of course, is a noted author and researcher, and several weeks ago, I tasked him with the job of digging up more information on Ebola. Christian, first and foremost, let's talk about this latest situation. These are scares. People are coming down with Ebola, people who have worked with patients. Is it as serious as people think?
Well, I hate to say it, George, but from all that I've looked at and read, it is probably as severe as we are anticipating, unless something is done to change the course of this. Now, there's a possibility tonight in Dallas that nurses will walk off their job because of a lack of infection control and training to protect them. How many people know that 10% of the deaths in Africa have happened to healthcare workers? And now our government is sending 4,000 military personnel into the battle zone. And how well prepared will they be? So if ISIS doesn't get you, maybe Ebola will. But I got to say, George, the health agencies have known about this virus and its risk of causing a pandemic for the past 41 years. So with the billions of dollars they've had at their disposal year in and year out, all these four decades, what have they been doing to prepare the world for an Ebola outbreak? And why are they just now acting like it's the new kid on the block?
Well, you know why? Because they forgot all about Africa. They forgot all. They didn't care. And now that it's beginning to grow and fester, now it's a major issue. You're right, Christian. They should have looked at this thing years and years ago. Here's a question for you, though. After 41 plus years of knowing about Ebola, we never had a case in the United States until recently. Why did it take so long?
Well, maybe it's just a bit of good fortune, but they've certainly known about it in Africa, in Liberia, in Sierra Leone. As I mentioned the other day, the next 120 days, they are anticipating 1.4 million deaths from the virus. And, you know, somebody in Spain just came down with it. Of course, a new case in Brazil. And people are getting on planes every day, leaving Africa, flying to Europe, South America. So that's all it takes to get something like this into the system. And then from there on, it just goes crazy. So, yeah, there is, but I got to tell you, there is something I read today that I've got to share with you.
All right, go ahead. You sound frustrated.
Oh, I am frustrated. The more I look at it, you know, the reason I took on this task with you, George, is because I had quite a bit of experience researching and writing about the AIDS virus.
That's right.
In the middle 80s when it came out. But today's information completely negates what the medical professionals have been told. You and I, George, doctors, nurses, have been under the assumption that it takes 21-day incubation to be free of the virus. Therefore, a patient would be sent home from quarantine after 3 weeks. But that apparently, according to this new report, is misinformation. The new report today from the WHO, the World Health Organization, is that 21 days is only half the duration of the virus. The correct amount of time to be free of the disease is not 21 days, as doctors have been told, but 42 days. And wouldn't that mean a patient returning to his family?
A little too premature.
Yeah, 21 days, you could still pass the virus for another 3 weeks. So should we be comfortable with this misinformation from our government? The president has said there's nothing to worry about. It's all under control. It's not under control, not in Liberia, Sierra Leone, Dallas, Texas, and getting much worse in Africa. There is a growing call for a travel ban, at least until we can get our act together.
I've been saying that for a week now.
Makes sense, doesn't it, George?
It sure does. And I've got to tell you, too, Christian, over the past year and a half, as you know, I've been saying that I sense something big. Something's about to happen. Could never put my thumb. I think this could be it.
This could be the crisis if they can't put a lid on it. There is a protocol that was put in place in 2005 that would permit and implement a travel ban, and Ebola was added to that list of diseases in anticipation of a crisis like we're beginning to see. Of course, we want to help people, and we can do it without infecting our own citizenry. We would do it that way. And if we had to contain it outside of our country, or we had three or four centers in America that are totally versed in how to deal with this disease and protect our people, that might make sense. But several airlines, you know, have closed flights in and out of cities in Africa as a precaution.
As we should. Christian, thank you so much. We will continue to follow up with you. Christian's website, myheartbook.com. He's also an expert there, myheartbook.com. Hey, don't blink, otherwise you're bound to miss a wild swing in this increasingly violent stock market. It was a memorable day on Wall Street as the Dow plummeted 460 points, yikes, before staging a rally to end down only 173 points. A lot of the concern, of course, worldwide economics and the Ebola scare situation. Andre Eglishon, a successful entrepreneur and talk show host in his own right. The Andre Eglishon Show. He focuses heavily on geopolitics and economics. Andre, it was time to bring you on to talk with you for a moment about all of this. Ebola scaring the stock market now.
Yeah, it absolutely is, George, and thanks for having me on. I think that, you know, when they look at what the World Bank said about it, that Ebola would end up costing the global economy probably about $32.6 billion, that is, if it spreads outside of Liberia and that whole region there, and that's those costs don't go beyond 18 months. I mean, a full-blown global pandemic is going to be very ugly. I mean, when I think back to the cost of the SARS epidemic in the Asian economies back in 2003, that was rough. But, I mean, no one has yet worked out a model for the economic costs of Ebola. But it's going to be very, very interesting. I can tell you that the cost of training workers dealing with these patients and the nobody knows what it's going to be, the disposal of the waste. It's going to be astronomical, though.
It sure is. Andre, it's been a while since we've had you on. Let's get you booked for at least several hours, okay?
Thank you so much, George.
Andre Eglishon. Italian police are investigating a nurse who was arrested over the weekend for a patient's death and who prosecutors believe may have killed 37 other people because they or their relatives simply annoyed her. A blizzard with several avalanches in the Himalayas and central Nepal are reported to have killed at least 26 trekkers and three farmers. Very sad story there. Real clowns see nothing funny about their depiction in the American horror story Freak Show. The FX series revolves around Twisty the Clown, a serial killer who stalks couples with scissors and imprisons children in an old school bus. While the president of the Clowns of America International, that's the biggest clown club, says they're not too happy about this depiction. They say that clowns are fun and friendly, and they don't support this anyway. Of course, as you know, since I was a kid, I don't like clowns, just don't like them. Federal Bureau of Investigation warning U.S. businesses that hackers could hit some companies backed by Chinese government. They have recently launched more attacks on U.S. companies' cybercrimes to get more information. Up next, Ty Bollinger joins us. Noted author, Cancer Step Outside the Box, Monumental Myths of the Modern Medical Mafia and Mainstream Media, and the Multitude of Lying Liars that Manufactured Them. That's a mouthful. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ty Bollinger with us for a couple hours. Ty, of course, is not a doctor, but he's a health freedom advocate, health researcher, former competitive bodybuilder, host, and best-selling author. I've mentioned a few of his books. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to tell you, he's been on the program before, but why he got involved in researching cancer with one of his major books, Cancer Step Outside the Box. He's also got a special program, DVD program, that he'll talk with you about in a second as well. Ty, always a pleasure, my friend. Welcome back.
Hey, George, great to be on with you tonight. Thank you for having me.
You know, we had a tragedy in my family not too long ago. My sister passed away. She had been diagnosed with stage 4 brain cancer several years ago. They gave her 6 months, Ty. She fought. Boy, she fought, had a couple surgeries, and, you know, she made it last 2 years. But this is a horrible, dreaded disease. You know, we're talking about Ebola, which is another thing we'll talk with you about. But the big C, what are we going to do about that?
Yeah, it's a horrible disease, and my condolences to you, George.
Thank you.
I've heard about that, and I know how that hurts, you know, losing a family member. Many family members to cancer, and time kind of heals the wounds, but it never makes the pain go away, though, completely. And so my condolences for that. The cancer is an epidemic, George. According to the World Health Organization, in 2010, they released statistics that of the people alive today, 1 in 2 men and 1 in 2 women are going to be diagnosed with cancer. So, wow. I mean, it's like, good night. 41% of us, 41% of the people listening today or tonight on the radio here are going to be diagnosed with cancer. It's just crazy, isn't it?
No, it really is. Now, how'd you get involved in researching cancer and fighting this?
Well, you know, initially in 1996, my father was diagnosed with cancer. He was diagnosed on the first day of July in 96, and he died 25 days later. And I began to do research at that time about the treatments for cancer. He had stomach cancer and had his whole stomach cut out, and he basically bled to death from the surgery. You know, the doctor did the best he knew how to do, but they just didn't really have an answer for stomach cancer. That had metastasized all over the stomach. So he died, and I just didn't understand how a medical system that's so advanced in many areas, with trauma medicine, for instance, we're so far ahead of the world. It's amazing. U.S. hospitals are fantastic, but I couldn't understand how that they couldn't save a man that was relatively healthy when he went into the hospital for what he thought was gallstones. And so I began to do research and began to come across treatments that were seemingly being suppressed, and come across doctors and stories of doctors that had been run out of the country because they were using non-approved treatments, you know, unapproved treatments that were natural. And that was really what got me into the research initially, George, and that was almost 18 years ago now.
Well, I was going to ask you that, too. It appears that the FDA is starting to really crack down now on practitioners who claim that they have a cure for cancer or that they can do this or that. What's going on in that area?
Oh, yeah, they've been cracking down on it for a long time, and they're continuing to. You know, one of the most well-known example of that would be Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski out of Houston.
Yeah.
And he has a treatment that he calls anti-neoplastons.
He's got like the Brzezinski Clinic, right?
Yeah, Brzezinski Clinic, and he's been persecuted by the FDA for about the last 20 years, and he's been in and out of the news. Several documentary films have been made on him, and I had the privilege to interview him just about 2 months ago for this documentary miniseries that I'm doing, and got a chance to meet him, go to his office, and sit down with him, met his wife, and I saw his, what he calls it, the wall of pictures. He's got pictures of people that were brought to him being terminal, supposedly, when they were children. He dealt with a lot of children. And then he's got pictures of them growing up, and pictures of them getting married, and pictures of them with grandkids, and kids and grandkids. It's really amazing. So he's been very, very successful. And, you know, you mentioned your sister had brain cancer. That's really his specialty. He's been very, very successful with brain cancers, but he's been very heavily persecuted by the FDA.
Exactly. What is cancer? Is it a mutant cell? What is it?
Well, it really depends on who you ask. You know, if you ask the conventional oncologist, they'll say the cancer DNA, rogue DNA in the cells, the cells have gone awry and they formed this tumor, the lump or the bump. And you ask somebody else and they'll give you a different answer. You know, from my research, cancer is a symptom of a sick body. And so you've got something that's gone wrong in the body. The immune system has been compromised or failed. And cancer, these tumors that you see, are really, they're symptoms of something else that's gone wrong. And I think that's really the main difference between what we would think of as alternative treatments and conventional treatments, is that the alternative treatments try to get to the root cause of why that lump or bump, that tumor, has appeared, instead of just cutting it out or shrinking it or, you know, poisoning it with chemotherapy to where you can say that the tumor went away. But is there still something underlying in that body that's still wrong that you need to fix? And so... You know, I think that makes the most sense to me, and that makes the most sense to many of the medical doctors that I've been interviewing over these last several months for this mini-series that we're doing, is the fact that you need to get to the root cause. And if you get to the root cause of that imbalance in your body and you can correct it, then that cancer can go away forever and it won't come back. And that's the problem with many folks who have been told that they're in remission. They've had chemo and radiation and the tumor shrunk and they're in remission. And then, you know, a year later, 16, 18 months later, it comes back with a vengeance. Well, the reason that it comes back is because you didn't correct that underlying imbalance that caused the lump of the lump.
Some people don't come down with cancer. They might not be particularly doing anything special, but I mean, what are they doing?
Well, you know, some people just have inherited a stronger immune system, potentially. I think that's the difference. You know, the same reason that you have somebody that is exposed to the same flu bug and somebody gets sick and somebody that was sitting next to him on a plane doesn't get sick. It's the immune system. The immune system is the difference. And so that's why some people can smoke. And, you know, you look at the person that smokes and drinks and lives to be 105, and then you have somebody like my father who never smoked and never drank and died at 52. And you just say, what's going on? How could one get cancer it seems like dad shouldn't have gotten cancer. And it seems like the person that lives a lifestyle that is, you know, more full of these toxins that would get cancer. But at the root difference, I think, is that somebody that lives a longer life has a genetically more potent immune system, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. And the person that comes down with cancer, their immune system is more fragile. They need to work more to provide the nutrients, the supplements, the nutrition, whatever it might be, to keep that immune system working the way it should. Otherwise, they may be susceptible to cancer.
Yet we may all have cancer cells in our systems. All of us, right?
We do. We do all have cancer cells in our systems, but a normally functioning immune system is able to kill those. The immune system is able to tag the cells and kill the cells, and you're never diagnosed with life-threatening cancer. You know, you produce cancer cells every day. But then the immune system tags them and kills them. But when that immune system's compromised, whether it be from just an overload of toxicity or whether it be from exposure to radiation or whatever it might be, then that immune system has had all that it can take, and that's when the cancer can begin to form tumors and then eventually spread. You know, it's not typically the tumor that kills you. It's the metastasis or the spreading of the cancer that can get you, because then it goes to the other organs, gets in the lymph nodes, gets in the bloodstream, and then that's at the point where it's really difficult to control.
Are we winning or losing the war on cancer, Ty?
Well, you know, I think the conventional treatments have proved that we're losing, at least from that perspective. You know, the death rates from cancer have actually risen a little bit over the last 40 years since President Nixon declared the war on cancer. The treatments really aren't working that well. There's a few select cancers that the conventional treatments like chemotherapy work on. You know, you've got your lymphomas, you've got your testicular cancer, some leukemias work well. But pretty much if you get a cancer that is an advanced cancer, stage four, and it's in any, you know, it is spread into the lymph or any vital organs, you got less than a 2% chance of making it from the traditional treatment. So I think we're really losing there, but I think we're winning in other areas. I think we're winning in the realm of public opinion, where people are actually waking up and they're realizing that it does make sense to strengthen your immune system. It does make sense to use these treatments that will help you to fortify that immune system, that will give you the nutrition that your body needs to where it works the way it was made to work. And so I've seen, since I published Cancer Step Outside the Box, George, in 2006, it's been 8 years, I've seen a huge awakening in people to where they're really understanding the direct relationship between nutrition, what you put in your body, eliminating toxins, detoxifying the body, the exercise, all of these things that we think of being healthy. They really do have a direct relationship on controlling cancer as well. And I think we're winning in that instance.
We're going to bring in a doctor for the next 30 minutes with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, thanks to you, we have reached another milestone. This with Facebook going well over our goal for the year. Thank you so much for liking us on Facebook. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Ty Bollinger, of course, will stay with us next hour as well when we take some of your phone calls. And for the remaining portion of this half hour, along with Ty, Dr. Rashid Buttar will be with us. Dr. Buttar is a graduate of the University of Osteopathic Medicine and Health Sciences. He trained in general surgery and emergency medicine as a brigadier surgeon and director of emergency medicine while serving in the U.S. Army. Is a board certified in clinical metal toxicology, preventative medicine, and is board eligible in emergency medicine as well. Here's Dr. Buttar on Coast to Coast. Doctor, author of The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. That's a good idea. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, George. I appreciate that.
I do want to ask you very quickly about this Ebola situation that is happening all over the planet right now. People are literally panicking. Is the panic, Doctor, justified in your opinion?
It's an illusion, George. It's an illusion created to distract the masses. There are more people that die from toaster ovens falling into their showers or hair dryers falling into their bathtubs than exponentially greater people that die from that than people that have died from Ebola in the United States. And to create this type of mass hysteria from something that is relatively unknown in this part of the world and really is more a function of the environment that the individual is living in, the poor sanitation, et cetera, the list can go on. It's just mind-boggling, and I think it's a justification. I'm sorry that if I sound like maybe I'm off the deep end here, but it's just a justification for the next phase, which will be some new vaccine that they're going to have.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been trying to kick around in my own head is, okay, does this get to a point where millions and millions of people get infected, and then all of a sudden the vaccine comes up?
That's exactly right. That's it. You just summarize the game plan.
And they don't want to bring it out now.
Crystal ball right now.
If they bring it out now, the few thousands that have this, they get cured, it stops. They don't make any money on that.
Well, if they bring it out right now, there's another aspect to this, another angle, that the people that actually get it will end up getting so sick from the vaccine that other people in mass protest will refuse to take it. That's the other angle.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the 9 steps to keep the doctor away.
Well, the 9 steps to keep the doctor away was a concept that I have actually started with about 5 steps, and it evolved into 9 steps. And I wrote the book, came out in 2010, and God blessed us that it became a bestseller all over the world, Wall Street Journal, USA Today. And it's basically the premise and the game plan, if you will, for what I do in my clinic. And we have patients now from 82 different countries. We have patients from 47 different states. And that's basically the game plan that I use with all my patients to get them going in the right direction. And then on top of that, then we start doing treatments that are relatively benign compared to conventional medicine, but they are designed to detoxify the body. The reason I say relatively benign is because any treatment has a potential of adverse effect. We've never had that issue, and we've done over 1.8 million treatments in my clinic since 1996 when I opened up my private practice, but we have been focused on detoxification, and once you get rid of the toxicity in the body, then the system has the opportunity to become online again and actually start to function. And so that's basically the premise. The 9 steps is, not 8 out of the 9 steps are things that people can do themselves. The 9th step was only available through a doctor, and now recently in the last 5 years has now also been readily available to anybody.
Now what is that one? That step.
That's actually a tool, a product that is designed to upregulate the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. The FDA came in last year This is a product that's been made in my lab. That was a lab that was inspected by the FDA every year for 15 years, registered with the FDA, labeled as a natural product, all grass ingredients. And then last year, the FDA came in and arbitrarily decided to call it a drug. And my attorneys basically advised me that we should just close the lab down because they were, because I was FDA registered laboratory by us making something that's natural, and then them coming and saying that this is an unapproved drug. They were basically saying it's an illegal drug, and if it's an illegal drug, it might as well be, you know, meth or coke or something like that. And
sure.
So we just shut the lab down and sold the formula, and so now it's available to other people.
I was telling Natai that it just seems that every time somebody out there, and I know they want to protect us, I'll put that in quotes, but they seem to come after everybody who claims that they've got something beneficial to fight a disease. How come?
I think that the system is set up to reward illness. And if you think about it for a second, and we just changed the paradigm where doctors didn't get paid unless they actually help people get better, do you think that that would completely change the entire paradigm and shift the emphasis on sickness to health? Meaning that the doctor only gets paid as long as the person is healthy, and as soon as the patient becomes ill, there's no remuneration. So the focus right now is the reward to the physician, to the medical entities, is only when the person is sick. But in the Far East, there are many incentives where the doctor only gets paid and the healthcare providers only get paid when the patient's better. Our entire system is based on sickness. We reward sickness. And I think that's the, you know, the whole system is just backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Ty, let's bring you in here on a moment. Your new docuseries, The Quest for the Cures, continues. Tell us, how did you find the people that you interviewed, the doctors and the other people involved in this?
Over the last 8-9 years since I published the book, I had the privilege to be introduced to a lot of pretty well-known doctors, including Dr. McDonald, who's online with us right now. You know, somebody hears about the book, reads it, shows it to their doctor, and they contact me. And so I've just become, you know, friends and colleagues with a lot of these doctors that I've been able to interview for The Quest for the Cures Continues. And, you know, we just kind of reached out in the spring. We actually had The Quest for the Cures in the spring. That's why this one's called Continues. And it was a free documentary miniseries that we aired online for a 7-day period for free to the world, and let them watch these interviews with these very well-known medical doctors who are curing cancer, treating cancer naturally, Dr. Buttar being one of them. And so now here we've got The Quest for the Cures Continues, which is now turned into, it's morphed into an 11-day documentary miniseries that began Monday.
Good for you.
And will be airing through next Friday, free to the world. And all people need to do to see it is go to thetruthaboutcancer.com.
Are you doing events, Ty? You should, where you show this almost like it's in a little movie theater.
You know, George, since we did The Quest for the Cures in the spring, we have not done that personally. I've not done that personally, but I've been contacted by at least a couple dozen people that said that they have done that locally. They've gotten together and just put it in a movie theater or in a church, you know, in the sanctuary or in a little convention center hall or wherever it might be, and shown this to groups of people. So I think that's a great idea, and maybe that's where we'll head in the future. What we've done at this point, though, the only thing that we've done is we're just streaming it online, you know, for free for anybody that wants to watch it.
Dr. Buttar, when someone comes to you and they've got cancer, what do you do? What are some of the first things that you recommend?
George, the first thing that I think is essential for an individual that has cancer is to understand that cancer is not the problem. It's only the symptom of an underlying problem. Cancer is like the messenger. It's a flashing light on your dashboard that's warning you that there's a problem. And if you start to attack the cancer, meaning you attack the dashboard light that's flashing, you're never going to get any solution. I never know if a patient after coming to the office will become a patient to actually get treatment, because treatment can be expensive. Insurance doesn't cover what we do. So I basically, my goal is to make an impact on them that whether I see them ever again or not will help them to fight this battle that they're in. And so one of the things that I believe is very, very important is for them to make a list of everybody that has, in their opinion, wronged them. And it doesn't matter whether the person's alive or dead, whether it was, you know, a child that stole your milk money when you were 4 years old or whatever in kindergarten. You forgive them. And you truly forgive them. You don't forgive them because they deserve forgiveness. You forgive them because you deserve to live a burden-free life. And so that's where it all starts. And then it's an emotional, psychological battle that they're dealing with. And so we can turn off the cancer, and we've done that numerous times. In fact, I had a patient in 1999 and a patient in 2000 that passed on, that made the transition. I don't call it death because I believe that, you know, the soul continues. But we these two patients were not successful with the treatment. And I've always wanted to have the autopsy done to see what they found. Families didn't want to pay for that. You know, what's the point of paying for an autopsy when they know that it was cancer? But in 1999, I had one patient, and in 2000, I had one patient where the families agreed to do autopsies. And on both cases, there was absolutely no trace of cancer anywhere. These are documented. The pathologist's report came in. In fact, the second was a hepatocellular carcinoma patient, or a liver cancer patient, and the pathologist argued with the morgue that they sent him the wrong patient. And the morgue basically said, listen, there was only four patients that came through our facility this week. Three were women, one was a male. You've got the male. We know the difference between a man and a woman. And basically the pathologist said, one, the 67-year-old man with hepatocellular carcinoma as a cause of death, one, has no cancer in his liver or anywhere in his body, and two, has a liver of a 30-year-old. So the tumor is not really the issue. You can turn off the tumor, but if the person believes in their mind that they're going to die, they're going to die. And we've had patients that have had a clean bill of health, you know, CATs against PET scan show there's nothing left, and 5 weeks after treatment, they die in a car wreck. 6 weeks later, they have a heart attack. 4 weeks later, they have a pulmonary embolus, and they die. So I always tell patients that if the Creator wants you, if you finished your mission on this planet, if everything that you were supposed to do has been accomplished, there's nothing that I or any other doctor can do to change the course of events. However, my job as a doctor is to, if God wants you, that you must find a different exit strategy, that it's not going to be cancer. That's the best that I can offer.
You have also looked at autism. Is there a connection here between autism and cancer?
Actually, the physiology that you see of a cancer patient and the physiology that you see of an autism patient is very similar in that they have an impaired ability to detoxify. So it's an environmental trigger or environmental triggers that actually cause the sequence of events to occur that lead to this injury that is a result of oxidative stress. And essentially, we're talking about the free radical theory here. We're talking about basically what happens to an apple when you cut it and starts turning brown. It's happening to the body constantly. But in cancer or autism or any of these other things, due to these seven different toxicities that I outlined in my book, they basically accelerate this oxidative damage. And that's where one person will develop cancer, another one will develop autism, another one will develop heart disease. So the mechanism of injury is all the same, but how it manifests in an individual will vary based upon the genetic predisposition and their biological uniqueness.
Ty, I have long suspected that holding up a cell phone to your head could cause some problems.
Yeah.
Sadly, I think my sister did that a lot. What do you think?
Absolutely, that's true. As a matter of fact, the first study was done on that back in the late 80s when, if you remember, George, the cell phones were about the size of footballs.
Right.
But they did. There was a study that was done by one of the Bell companies out in California, and they hired a scientist to do a study. They wanted to show the predisposed determination of this study was to be that the cell phones were harmless. Unfortunately for the Bell company, the researcher found out that the cell phones were at that time were causing brain cancer.
And since I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ty, but the name of the scientist was George Carlo.
George Carlo, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine.
And since that time, there have been at least a couple dozen studies that I'm familiar with that have all shown that the cell phones do cause brain tumors. As a matter of fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Buttar, but I think it's upwards of 90% of the tumors are found on the side of the head where the people hold the cell phone.
Yeah, it's a very, very high percentage. And to add to what Ty just said, Dr. Carlo was actually paid. It wasn't just by one company. One company contacted him, and then there was a number of companies that got together, and they paid him a lot of money to do this research. When he went to publish this research, they sued him, and they tried to prevent him from releasing the information because he found not only that was there a correlation, but there was a very significant correlation, and they tried to prevent him from releasing this information because they said that they owned the information because they had paid for the research. Actually, Dr. Carlo was supposed to be on the Oprah show, and then at the last minute they pulled it. So I'm not sure what kind of political issue was going on, but he's written a couple of books on it, actually, George.
Well, it is a hot potato, I think, Ty and Dr. Buttar, that when anybody comes up with so-called cures, which you can't even say anymore, they come down on you, and they come down on you really hard. I mean, there's some cases out there with some practitioners who are under fire right now. A few have been on this program over the years, and, you know, their claims are being attacked. Is that fair? Is that protecting the public, or is it something else, Ty?
Well, I mean, it's clearly something else, George. As a matter of fact, Dr. Buttar has been attacked. He's been attacked by the FDA and specifically the North Carolina Medical Board. And it, one of his trials, I'll let him give you the details. They had accused him, I think, of using therapeutics that he knew would not work on cancer patients or something to that effect. And when he showed them patients, he had patients lined up ready to testify that they were alive because of his treatments. The board said, this is irrelevant. We don't really care. Was that the gist of it, Dr. Buttar?
That's basically the gist of it. The specifics were that they brought me an ethical breach of conduct, becoming a physician by doing treatments that I knew were non-effective. We had 32 stage 4 cancer patients ready to testify. They allowed 5 to testify. One was a doctor himself who had cancer. One was an oncological nurse who had cancer. And the other 3 were lay people. All 5 that testified were stage 4. All 5 had been referred to hospice. All 5 had been given less than 6 months to live. Some of them, you know, only 3 or 4 months to live. All of them had metastatic disease. 4 out of 5 had already failed chemo and radiation. One refused to. And after 14 hours of testimony and cross-examination of these 5 patients, and just so you know, George, one was 8 years out from the cancer, one was 5 years out of the cancer, and the other 3 were 3 years or more out from the cancer. And after the testimony of these 5 people, the medical board's response was, as Ty said, one-word response, and that was irrelevant.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
they didn't want to hear that.
It cost me $14.5 million to fight these bastards. And it was just because they even told me, they said, all you have to do to drop all this 3.5-year battle, all you have to do is agree not to see any more cancer patients.
What about Dr. Tullio Simonici out in Italy, who attacks cancer tumors with baking soda, sodium bicarbonate? What do you think of that?
To alkalize the system is effective. Unfortunately, many people have tried to duplicate his process and have been less than successful.
Uh-huh.
I think that there is validity to alkalizing the system without any doubt, but I have not seen it to have the same type of response. And I think that Ty would agree with me that there's no panacea. This is a spiritual issue. There's many treatments that will turn off the tumor, but patients will still die unless they change their mindset, their emotional, psychological basis from where this all starts.
Sure.
And but you know, there's many ways of skinning a cat. I think that the basic concept, and Ty, you can tell me, you know, what your opinion is. And Ty's book has been you know, I met Ty through his book, actually, because I read his book and I thought that it was a very well done book.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly.
I met him the same way.
And then, George, then I met him, and then I realized the truth about Ty. So we won't get into that. I'm being, you know, tongue in cheek over here. But Ty and I have become, you know, very good friends over the years, and I think that the basis of addressing the problem with cancer must be acknowledged that this is an environmental trigger that creates that initiates that entire cascade. In fact, the 2010 presidential report on cancer, for the first time ever, at least that I'm aware of, the government admitted in a 263-page report, the synopsis of it was that they admitted that this was an environmental issue that had not been adequately addressed.
I think it's, do you find that patients with cancer all have acidic pH levels?
Yes, I do, but I don't think it's that the cancer causes the acidity. I think it's their lifestyle that has the acidity aspect of it. It's like one of these things where, you know, the book came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah, scenario. Well, does the acidity cause the cancer?
Well, it's hard to say whether the acidity causes the cancer or the cancer, because cancer is acidic, and, you know, there's many different thought processes. What I would want to impress upon the listeners is that the body, the human body, is a piece of machinery that is just, you know, created by the ultimate engineer, and there are areas in the body that are separated by less than 6 inches. Let's use the gastric antrum, for example, the part in the stomach right before it goes into the small intestine. And the pH there is 1. You know, it'll copper off a penny.
That's
and
low.
Six inches past that, through the Pollock sphincter, the pH is 14, you know, which is very alkaline. So when you talk about pH, the pH is, and in fact, in the blood, in the bloodstream, if your pH is 7.45 or 7.25, you're dead.
That is too much. Doctor, thank you for being on the program. The 9 steps to keep the doctor away. Dr. Buttar's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'll come back in a moment more with Ty Bollinger and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.